Welcome to the Estate Planning Experts Podcast. Created by best-selling author and nationally recognized estate planning attorney, Shane Smith. On each episode, we bring together experts in various aspects of estate planning to help you protect your family, your assets, and your peace of mind. To get your free copy of Mr. Smith's Consumer Awareness Guide, How to Avoid the 7 Deadly Sins of Estate Planning, or if you are in Atlanta and are interested in your free Estate Planning for Life consultation, simply register at www.theestateattorneyatlanta.com.
Today I have the good fortune to be joined by Justin McClain. Justin, thanks so much for joining us today and agreeing to do the interview.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, I'm going to take you back a little bit in time because you've got a little bit of a unique story. What inspired you? How did you get started?
Sure. Well, I started university when I was 15 or so and graduated at 19 with a biology degree and decided I didn't want to be a doctor and it sort of doubled up on and ended up finishing university at 20. And, you know, the thing about 20 and done with school is that you got a lot of time out of you. The problem is that you're largely unemployable. So I was an accidental entrepreneur. Luckily, this was late 90s and, the great American tech boom. And not because I was good at what I did, but just because I was around at the right time, had started and later sold a software company. And from that company, divested a telecom professional services company and later sold it. And along the way, had sort of the fortune to be able to invest in some companies and kind of I like the ownership side of business a lot more than the day-to-day operation. And from the proceeds of those transactions along with the things along the way, I started a private equity fund called Duart Mall, and that we spend all of our time investing in growth capital firms as well as buying founder-owned companies to hopefully later sell to profit.
That is absolutely incredible. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you've started and successfully sold and exited from two companies yourself and then used the proceeds of that to start a private equity fund where you invest in other companies and help them to achieve successfully what you did, which is growth and eventual sale. Did I get that accurate?
We're all the founder in that we're building the company towards a success. And because we're a captive fund, we're using our own money. We're not using committed funds or outside investors. We can be a little bit more flexible and hold the companies a little longer. So we focus on companies that are under $3 million in EBITDA, which are typically underserved by financial buyers and investors. And then we try to grow them above the hurdle rates of, $10 million, minimum $5 million EBITDA, where you can run a successful process and find financial buyers that would buy the companies at a good profit.
And what are you finding when you get involved with a business and you start doing your due diligence? What are you finding in terms of, are they approaching you? Are they looking to sell? Are you coming to them and they don't even know you exist? How does that process work?
Generally we speak to firms that are looking for an exit or that they need additional capital, and the majority of our opportunities are referrals, attorneys and bankers and accountants that have clients that are either looking to exit their businesses or more often trying to grow them, and they have financial needs that aren't bankable. They can't borrow against assets, and we're also very involved. So we have a reputation for working with founders and augmenting beyond just capital, but connections and expertise or connection to expertise to help grow the company aggressively. When you're day to day in your business, you find that you're often working inside your business versus working on it. And when you're building your company for an eventual transaction, that drives strategy as well as a lot of tactical decisions that you make on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. So we often find that, you know, we can step in on sort of day zero of an investment, create a 100-day plan where we outline not just the strategy of how to operate a company successfully for what's generally about 5 years, but to position it best for an exit. And we generally find that the companies that we encounter, while they might be successful companies at doing what they do or in their technical trade, they're not really being built for transfer. And that encompasses everything from developing a leadership team and a management team independent of the owner through, you know, collecting data and making sure that the company is truly free to operate in the way that it's been organized. So we often come in and can help sort of correct or at least augment the founder's ability to run the day-to-day with a way to really create enterprise value.
So what are you finding is are some of the differences between a business owner who's a founder who's just doing what he does versus building a business to exit? How does that, obviously that's a vast difference. What are some of the key factors that affect that?
Well, often businesses and successful businesses produce a great lifestyle for the founder. And, you know, we're sort of in this inflection point in American demographics where every day in America, 50,000 people turn 50 years old. And a substantial number of these baby boomers are entrepreneurs. And, you know, while they've run their business often on a cash basis to produce income, they're not investing in their businesses in the ways that create a sustained enterprise value. So, you know, these are often, you know, huge sources of opportunity for us where we come in and we look less at the weekly, you know, or sorry, monthly, quarterly, sort of annual income that the business produces, and say, all right, how can we create true value in the company? And a lot of it has to do with just formalized procedures and, you know, converting accounting to GAAP. Putting in systems and ways to collect information, and then developing a leadership team where if someone buys that company, they're not buying the lifestyle of the founder, but they're actually buying an entity that will, you know, continue to produce cash for the duration of our, regardless of ownership. And we focus heavily on top line growth, customer diversity. You know, what's a founder may find that if they have a single customer that provides 80% of their revenue, that's a lot less work than if you have, you know, 10 customers that each produce 10%. But from a way to transfer value in an organization, an 80% level of concentration in a single customer is the death knell of any sort of exit. So just diversifying revenue basis, being a little bit sharper with cost, you know, truly recognizing cost and revenue and the periods that they happen, the things that finance nerds need to see when they buy a company aren't exactly consistent with, those aren't the rigors that are consistent of a good entrepreneur. So we bring in a little bit of formality and a lot of documentation and always an eye on, you know, when someone buys this company, why will it sustain cash flow after the founder exits?
That makes total sense. What do you like most about what you do?
I mean, honestly, it's what I like most is that, you know, you can learn a lot. I mean, you deal with very motivated people that are aligned with us, which are exiting companies for you know, hopefully an appreciable increase in value. And people are motivated and they're great. We learn more from the entrepreneurs that run the businesses that we're invested in than any sort of class that I've taken. So it's great. On a Monday, we can be knee-deep into a beverage company. And on Tuesday, it's a telecom company. And Wednesday, it's a trucking company. So intellectually, it's great to be around people very competent and passionate about what they do. And you know, I can't wait to work every day to learn something new.
What are some of the most common mistakes that you see business owners making when thinking about soliciting outside capital or selling their companies?
When it comes to selling the company, the largest mistake is a failure to run a proper process. You know, the only way you truly know the market value of an asset is for a large sampling of qualified buyers to make bona fide offers. And we often find that, you know, people that are going through a even in the capital raise process for an exit of the business, they don't run a proper process. So that, it's not only a matter of maximum sort of enterprise value, but it's terms. If you're 50 or 60 years, you might be more concerned about some close and some sort of extraordinary earnout, or about limit liabilities and clawback types of things that would take away the cash proceeds of the sell of your business. So it's an in process. You can truly not the max capital value or the enterprise value of the business, but at the best possible terms. Which, if you're in sort of the twilight years of your career, it's the most amount of cash with the highest degree of confidence that you're going to retain it.
What are some of the, I guess, how do you determine, how you talked about getting referrals, you talked about how you approach a business and what your methodology is. What about when it comes to succession planning, when it comes to a family-owned business where they may not necessarily, do you run into that, where it's not necessarily selling it, but getting it from one generation to the next, and what mistakes are made there? Do you encounter that business succession planning issues at all?
Sure, and we encounter it most often in terms of the deals that we don't do. You know, one of the principal requirements for us to get involved in a business and a founder is alignment, and we're aligned in that. We're going to invest our capital and our time and a whole lot of our energy for the next probably 3 to 5 years, maybe a little longer, to sell the company. And we often find that the founders approach us and they don't really have a clear vision for what their exit is. They know that they personally want to be out of the business and they personally need some liquidity to compensate for that loss of annual income. But they don't know. Do they want to turn it on over to Junior or their grandchildren, or do they want to sell the business? And if we're not completely aligned, we don't do the deal. But that same sort of lack of clarity on the exit creates massive havoc for companies. Just from a leadership perspective, if you have employees that don't know who the next leader of the company is, that causes attrition. It can cause a lot of politics and infighting. In terms of how to structure capital sources and you know, debt versus equity, to bring on an equity investor where the certainty of the business is undetermined is a recipe for disaster with investors. So, business owners that are contemplating exit, absolutely, and it's an internal bit of soul searching, should figure out, do they want to remain in the business in any form? And if so, how? Do they want to pass this on to children and have it remain sort of a legacy type business? But that those types of personal questions have to be answered, because that impacts every bit of strategy relative to an exit and how you monetize the company.
Who is an ideal business for you?
We get most excited about the growth capital placements. So we like, a business that's doing a few million bucks in EBITDA. So it's stable and it's a real company. There's somewhat of a nominal single event risk. But there's a founder that's engaged and not only wants to be part of it for, you know, the 5 to 7 years we're going to be in a relationship together, but for the next owner, another 5 to 7 year type period. So we like companies that are truly revenue producing, real companies with real revenue and a real product or service. They're in an industry that's measurable. They're not creating something that the market's never seen and no one knows is a real problem, but we can size the market and the potential of the company based upon, you know, an established industry. And this company has a unique selling point, a differentiator against the other sources of whatever that product or service is in the market. And then all those items being satisfied, it really comes down to the people. Is this an honest person? Is this someone that we can be in a relationship with for the next 5 to 7 years? Are they competent? Do they know what they're doing? And are we aligned? And if those things are satisfied, it's a great business and a great industry. We're extremely excited to be part of the growth.
What didn't I ask you that I should have?
I guess relative to exits, the valuation always comes down. And when people are looking to sell their business that's produced a certain level of income or income off, or expense offset, that there can offset the delta in valuation. So in valuation is the product of a lot of different inputs. But we often find founders that are selling their business that are valuing their business based on lifestyle. And that's not really relevant to how the company's independently work. So if there's any suggestion I can make relative to valuation is to have the company bring in an advisor, an investment banker if they're of a large enough size, and plot out a roadmap to say in a true independent market, how does this business create a value to a financial buyer or a strategic buyer that is consistent with your lifestyle needs? That's a huge gotcha for people as they contemplate unwinding themselves from their business.
That makes total sense for our business owners who are consuming this interview and are thinking about investment capital or exit strategies and meet some of your criteria and would want to learn more about you. Where should we send them? Where should they go?
Well, they're welcome to go to our website. It's DuartMull, DuartMull.com. And we look forward to talking about the business. We love talking with entrepreneurs and founders, and if we're not a great fit, we might be able to point them on to someone who is.
Okay. Well, this is we've been here with Justin McLean. Thank you so much. You've led a fascinating interview. I greatly appreciate your time. We greatly appreciate your expertise. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate your time.